Good morning, everybody. My name is Nehru Charukapalli, and I'm the Interim Executive Director for the Asian American Research Institute. And I want to welcome all of you to this conference we have today. And we're going to have a wonderful day, and it's going to be very nice outside and inside as well. And I'm happy to note that we have a set of people who are experts on the Caribbean, and they're going to be speaking to us this morning. And of course, after lunch, which is going to be a Caribbean treat, we're going to have some more talks and then end up with some wonderful entertainment in the evening. Before I get started, I do want to mention that we as a group are very sorry about the goings on in the Blacksburg area, and I would like to request all of you to stand up for 1 minute in honor of the people who gave their lives. Thank you. Thank you very much. May their souls rest in peace, and hopefully their families will be able to cope with all the goings on that went on. But coming back to our conference this morning, we have Dr. Harold Robinson sitting there. We have Rohit Jagisar sitting next to him. And then we have Dr. Walton Lukalai sitting over there. And then we also have Mr. Amin Ganesh Ram sitting at the end. And we are going to be hearing from all of them this morning. And I don't want to take too much time out to read the biographies of all these people who have expertise. And you have this booklet with you, and you can read and appreciate the expertise that they all have in terms of whatever they're going to speak about. And I don't want to take too much time before I invite Dr. Harold Robertson, who is the Consul General for Trinidad and Tobago in New York City. His office is not too far from here. And I had the good fortune of meeting him and having a very nice chat, and he's excellent. And I will not stand here talking any more about him. I invite Dr. Robertson to come and deliver his managing the bridges between the Caribbean and New York City enclaves not so far removed. Dr. Robertson. Put this on for you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, before I deliver the few remarks I managed to scribble at a late hour yesterday, let me perhaps do a couple of things. Firstly, to fully associate myself with the first remarks of Dr. Charukapalli. I am one of those who share the view that what happens to human beings anywhere affects us all. And the monstrous assault on an institution of learning that took place earlier this week is something that affects all of us. I personally and members of my staff were quite saddened and horrified at the events at Virginia Tech, and I wish here to place on record our most profound condolences to all who have suffered loss as a result of that event. I also want to say that Dr. Charukapalli referred to some people at the head panel as experts on the Caribbean and various other things. I lay no such claim. I'm a student, I'm a diplomat, I'm all sorts of things, but expert, please don't associate my name with expertise. If I can proceed, Dr. Sheyoku Pali, Executive Director of the Asian American Asian Research Institute of the City University of New York, members of the conference committee and organizers of today's events, distinguished speakers and panelists at the head table, distinguished ladies and gentlemen, permit me first of all to congratulate the organizers of today's event, which is not only timely but very relevant, since for the first time it seeks to beam a multifaceted searchlight on the experience and the journeys of peoples of Asian origin to the Caribbean and to the Americas. Asians first arrived in the Caribbean over 2 centuries ago. I am aware that popular perception of the term Asian tends invariably to be related to persons originating from the Indian subcontinent. But the fact is that the first Asians to arrive in this part of the world came from China. The first Chinese immigrants landed in Trinidad aboard the ship Fortitude in October 1806. There were 192 of them. Indeed, some of us, and I'm sure Professor Luklai would recall, that last year in October, Trinidad and Tobago commemorated the 200th anniversary of that arrival of Chinese individuals into the country. Indian immigration, it may be recalled, actually commenced with the arrival of 414 persons transported from India aboard 2 vessels, the Hesperus and the Whitby, who arrived in what is today Guyana in May 1838. So there is a difference of some 32 years between the first arrivals of those two groups of peoples. Subsequently, in May 1845, a fateful month, the Fatal Razak landed in Trinidad and Tobago with a number of migrants from India. Asian immigration changed the face of the populations of the Caribbean, the Americas, and indeed Europe, indelibly and forever. If I may turn to the actual events, the first observation that one may make is that while over the years Chinese immigration to the Caribbean and elsewhere has tended to be somewhat sporadic, Indian immigration was the result of a deliberate policy orchestrated by the British government, which for much of the 19th century and indeed into the 20th were the colonizers of India and most of the Caribbean. The first attempt to introduce Chinese into Trinidad was an experiment intended to ameliorate Trinidad's perennial labor problems. They were earmarked not only to introduce a new population into the then newly acquired territory of Trinidad, but also as potential replacements for African slaves who would no longer be available once the slave trade was abolished. These initial Chinese were brought from Macau, Penang, and Canton. The experiment failed. Of the 192 who landed in Trinidad in 1806, only 23 opted to remain. The others returned to China. A second wave of Chinese came between 1853 and 1866, as Chinese migrated from their homeland in much larger numbers. During this time, Chinese people traveled not only to the Caribbean, particularly Trinidad and Tobago and Jamaica, but also to Australia, Canada, and the United States. Another outflow to foreign lands began after 1911 as a direct result of revolutionary upheavals in China. Currently, as China has become more open to the world at large, there has been something of a resumption of the outflow of Chinese to America and to the Caribbean. Those of us who are keeping up with modern developments will know that Chinese persons were responsible for the construction of World Cup facilities for cricket in Grenada and are heavily involved in a variety of activities, construction and otherwise, currently in Trinidad and Tobago. The Indian story, as most of us know, has been somewhat different. Indians were first brought from Calcutta and Madras under conditions of indentureship to replace the emancipated Africans who had fled plantations in droves. Subsequently, Indian migrants were sourced from Uttar Pradesh, Bihar, Central India, Nepal, Punjab, Bengal, Bombay, Orissa, Ajmer, and elsewhere throughout the subcontinent. Indian migration took no account of caste or religion. Hindu and Muslim, Brahmin and Shamar were all one on the ships transporting Indians across the Kalapani. Millions of Indians were brought to the Caribbean and the Americas between the commencement of the indentureship program in 1838 and its eventual cessation in 1817 after the First World War. The coming of these Asians into the region led to a sea change, not only in the population, but also in the religious and other practices, in culture, in food, in education, in politics, in economic development. Asian immigration introduced unique and enriching gifts to the demographic landscape, resulting in a broad diversity to be found in the Caribbean and indeed the Americas today. The sons and daughters of India have made outstanding and enduring contributions in a variety of fields, including education, culture, science, technology, medicine, mathematics, literature, diplomacy, public service, sport, agriculture, family values, economics. Indeed, even as we meet today, Trinidad and Tobago is in the midst of celebrating and honoring its greatest literary son, Sir Vidya Naipaul, winner of the Nobel Prize for Literature. But while Sir Vidya was among the thousands who, having been born in the Caribbean, went on to make another life in Europe, thousands more have migrated from the Caribbean to the United States, to Canada and elsewhere. Caribbean Asians, as we probably know, have formed a formidable cultural, economic, and political community in Queens, New York. A quick trip around Brooklyn would reveal the culinary influence of Caribbean Indians in the plethora of establishments offering a cuisine which is unique to the Indian Caribbean. Journey to Toronto, Vancouver, and I dare say elsewhere, and I'm sure you will come to similar conclusions. Needless to remark, no city of any size anywhere in the world today is without its Chinatown. And so, as you embark on your activities today, I hope that your discussions and your interactions will be both lively and fruitful, providing not only intellectual fare, but also defining a way forward to strengthen the ties not only between all Asians in the Caribbean and in the Americas, but also between all our peoples in the Caribbean, in the Americas, in Asia, and indeed around the world, leading to a richer understanding of what a distinguished son of Asia, Guyana, and the Caribbean, Sir Sridhar Ramphal, once labeled our inseparable humanity. I thank you for your attendance, your presence, and your attention. I wish you every success in your deliberations, and I crave your forgiveness if I have to rush off early, because I have with me in my office a prime ministerial commission that also demands my attention today. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Dr. Robertson. For those of you who came in late, I want to say welcome to the Asian American Research Institute. My name is Nehru Charukupali, and I'm the executive director of this institute. This conference on the Caribbean Asians, The Journey Continues, is sponsored by our institute, by the Global Organization of People of Indian Origin, GOPIO, Guyanese East Indian Civic Association, GECA, and New York City Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs. And we are doing this conference as part of the Immigrant Week being celebrated by the City of New York under the Mayor's Office's auspices. We will have time to ask questions perhaps later on, and our next speaker, Rohit Jageser, is a historian, a producer, a director, and a principal of the RBC Radio, and I have great pleasure in inviting him to talk about the overview of Caribbean Asian life in the Caribbean and New York City, and then ask the five crucial questions: who, what, when, where, and why. These are the questions that most journalists ask, and I'm sure he'll be able to ask the questions and answer them too. Jageser.
Thanks. Like the Honorable Consul General, I'm certainly not a historian, neither an expert, but nonetheless, I'll try to give you a little overview on the Caribbean, the West Indies. Mr. Chairman, the Honorable Consul General of Trinidad and Tobago, distinguished guests, people of the media, members of the dais, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to begin, if I may, by asking the technician if he could play a 2.5-minute trailer of a film that I made about 3 years ago, which will sort of give you an insight of the arrival of Indians for the first time in the British Caribbean, the West Indian region. 19th century, there were no songs at that time. Hopefully they'll fix this problem. All right, thanks. It was a legend of El Dorado that drew Walter Raleigh to the West Indies about 400 years ago. A century before that was Columbus' turn. When Columbus went back, Spain decided that the West Indian region would not produce enough of silk and spices. And as a result, they would turn to other crops in areas as Brazil and the Caribbean West Indian region. Walter Raleigh's quest for El Dorado, the mythical, the myth of El Dorado, would not yield any gold. However, the Spanish and subsequently the French, the Dutch, the British would discover gold in what was known as gold dust, in that of sugarcane, sugar. The abolition of the transatlantic slave trade would take place in 1807, 200 years ago, this year. And the complete abolition of slavery in the West Indies, the Caribbean region, would take place in 1833 and finalized in 1834. The reason why Indians were brought to this region was because the British planters risked losing their plantations. Britain had just taken the three areas of Guyana known as Berbice, Essequibo, and Demerara, and formed what was known as British Guyana. As the Consul General mentioned, there was a period of emancipation apprenticeship, which lasted for about 4 years and ended on August 1st, 1838. The East India Company was formed in 1600 on New Year's Eve, December 31st, and it was the East India Company that made a presence subsequently in India about 6-7 years later, blessed by Elizabeth I. In 1757-58, during the mutiny, was a time when India became crown, owned by the British crown, and the British Raj came to an end. However, Elizabeth was now the Emperor of India. I'm sorry, I'm talking of the Victorian period, which will come in 1837. During the Victorian period, the movement of Indians would start from India to the West Indies, with the East India Company firmly planted in India, with Britain having a stronghold in areas such as Calcutta, Madras, Delhi, and so on. They would take advantage of that presence, and subsequently, as the Consul General mentioned earlier, more than 1 million people would be shipped away from India to places such as Fiji, Mauritius, Reunion Island, Guyana, Trinidad, Suriname, Jamaica, and other parts of the world. John Gladstone was a British planter, a merchant based out of Liverpool. Around the system, how it worked in that time was the planters in the West Indies would export their sugar to England for local consumption and at times for re-export to other areas across Europe. John Gladstone was a merchant and he represented some of the planters in the West Indies. And in those years, the merchants back in Britain would advance money to take care of the expenses of these planters in the West Indies. And subsequently, when the planters could not repay them, the merchants would seize those plantations. And so by around 1815 or so, John Gladstone got hold of two plantations, Vredestein and Vredenhoop in Guyana. It was John Gladstone whose son later on would become the Prime Minister of Britain. It is told that money made from slave labor, from the labor of indentured servants, would educate the future Indian Prime Minister, I'm sorry, British Prime Minister. Indians were recruited from India to the West Indies on a system whereby the locals would be sent to villages, the first to the hills of Calcutta, recruiting indigo planters known as hill coolies. In 1837, that movement would start. And the first two ships would leave in early 1838, bringing with them, as the Consul General said again, over 400 Indians arriving for the first time on May 5th, 1838 in Guyana, British Guyana. It is interesting to note that that was the very first organized group of Indians to arrive in the Americas. The British and Foreign Anti-Slavery Society, especially that of John Scoble, he would spend many years lobbying the House of Commons, the Parliament, and requesting that steps be taken to end, first, African slavery, and subsequently, the system known as Indian indentureship. From the planters' point of view, everything was fine in the West Indies, in the Caribbean. Slavery was abolished. They said they were doing the right thing. Britain had approved the system of Indian indentureship. So the planters saw no risk of getting back into trouble as they did during slavery. It is also interesting to note that Britain paid 20 million pounds in those years as compensation to the British planters in that region, some of them receiving about the highest number, about 51 pounds for each freed slave. The average was about 20 or 22 pounds per slave. But the slaves, although they have labored for generations on the plantations, they walked away without compensation. Even that they were freed, they were still in the period of emancipation, of apprenticeship, for about 4 years. And many moved to what was known then as black settlements. There, the British would at times chide them, give them a hard time, saying that this land does not belong to you. You are squatters. And so they would continue to give them a hard time so that they continue to keep order on the colonies. The Indians, on their part, arrived in 1838. Upon arrival, they were promptly enslaved, despite lots of Indians in the West Indies who not like to look upon the system of Indian indentureship in the early years, that we were enslaved, but we cannot change that. That is what happened. The British planters were used to that sort of approach to laborers, and they would continue to do so until John Scoville will arrive a year later to discover that slavery is continuing in the West Indies, this time on the backs of the Indians. Indentureship was allowed to continue in that territory until 1917, when it finally came to an end. My father was born that year. A year later, another gentleman, Dr. Chetty Jagan, was born in 1918. They grew up not far from each other on plantations Albion and Portmorant, and a relationship which started in those early years when they were childhood friends would continue through right to the end in 1987, when my father passed on. And the relationship between Indian families, as it was in India, grew stronger in the West Indies, and the culture of India grew stronger in the West Indies, because if we were to look today at countries fighting neighboring countries, people of a nation, people of the same race and religion fighting each other, but in the West Indies, in the Caribbean, we have, if I may say, ideal communities, because Guyana is a land of six races. Not one, but six races. And it is an example to the world that people from six different ethnicity backgrounds could live together in such harmony. And that is one of the wonders, I believe, of the world. In areas like Trinidad, you would find pretty much the same. There is a division at times of election, which is pretty now normal in those territories. But put that aside, and you would find that the Africans, the Indians, the Chinese, the Portuguese, even the Europeans who remain there, their ancestors, they all live in harmony. And I think if the world was to today look at the West Indies and the Caribbean, this region, you would find a lot of examples, good examples, from these people. Their ancestors came from that of slavery, Indian indentureship. In 1834, as Indians first arrived in Mauritius, 1838 in Guyana, 1845 in Trinidad, aboard the Fata Razak, the ship. And a century apart, they would start to make their way into America, into Britain, into Canada, different parts of the world. But this time it was done voluntarily, as they went to find their dreams. So no one really found El Dorado. But through the journey of slavery and indentureship, eventually we found each other. And I guess that is perhaps the biggest prize at the end of it all, that we now have come to meet each other, to understand each other, to share our cultures together, and a time to mix our cultures together in our music and our food and so on. We'd also find that the children of slaves, of indentured servants, have really done quite well. They have this will to succeed, especially since they have come from such backgrounds and struggles. I think my 20 minutes is done. Yeah, okay. You try again? Thanks. This was done in year 2004.
Thanks.